Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
And happy Monday to you, everybody. And welcome in to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you. And our summer extravaganza continues with our shuffling lineup of special guest stars, guest hosts. Derek Mason is still on vacation this week. He'll be back with us next week. Looking forward to that. We have got a busy, busy week ahead. Huge night in sports television tonight with the College World Series and the Stanley Cup Finals going to the final game. Both will be on TV tonight, and so many people will be watching. We'll have a lot of previews of that. So last week, we had Jill Jelinek from Fox 17. We had Hal Gill, Predators analyst, as my co-host. This week, no exception. We have a huge standard that we've set. So we have called on the services of Adam Vingan, who has been the ultimate utility man. I think he has appeared on every single show on this station in the last probably 2 weeks, I think. This completes the trifecta. Adam, welcome in.
I'm happy to be here. I have not been on Chase and Big Joe. They have both been here. But I did fill in for Joe for 4 out of 5 days with Robbie 2 weeks ago. And last week I was on with Jake for 1 day in place of Jared, who will be back from vacation at 2 o'clock. But this is the first time that you and I have done a show together. We've had plenty of conversations over the years, spirited conversations about sports, but this is the first time we're doing a show together, so I'm looking forward to it.
This is going to be awesome, and it's a great week to do it with the NHL draft coming up later this week, and then, of course, free agency on the early part of next week is going to be wild, and the Predators are reportedly going to be very busy, and so we'll have plenty to talk about this week on their front. So, first of all, Adam, let me tell you where I'm at, because this is exciting. We're going to do our first show, but we're not in the studio together because I went to a wedding this weekend my wife is a New Englander through and through. Her dad is one of 10 siblings, so she has a ton of cousins, one of which got married over the weekend. And so it was a wild wedding. I had not been to a wedding in a while. But this was big time. So, Adam, I was just curious, when's the last wedding that you've been to?
It was somewhat recent. I went to my wife's cousin's wedding, my wife's cousin's wedding. It was October of last year, so not terribly long ago. And over the weekend, we were actually in the Orlando area for that same cousin's baby shower. So it's been about 6, 7, 8 months or so since I last went to a wedding.
Yeah, I feel like it was longer for me. And I'm definitely realizing that I am moving back further to the periphery of the excitement of the wedding. Like our former host, Caroline Fenton, who, if you have been out of pocket the last couple of weeks, she's taken another job and she'll be starting that here very soon. We'll tell you about it and she'll be back on the show sort of as a guest, as a family member, but she was going to she's at that age, a stage of life where all of her friends are getting married, so she was going off to a wedding like every other weekend for a while. But I was just curious, like the perspective, as you get older, your role changes a little bit. You know, you're not in the wedding anymore. It's not like your best buddies. And so I'm well past that stage. So it's like, how do you act, you know, when you're around all these younger people, you know, high 20s, low 30s kind of crew? Like, can you get in there and dance with everybody? Like, even if you wanted to?
Absolutely. What's stopping you? And that's the point, is that you're on the periphery, right? So if you make a fool out of yourself, it's not like you were a major part of the wedding party or something like that. No one's going to say, you know, that groomsman, the best man, made a complete fool of himself on the dance floor. They're going to be like, what's that old guy doing out there? Oh, you know, whatever. No offense to you. You're not old to me, but you may be old to someone who's in their early to mid-20s or late 20s.
There's no question. There's no question. And the other side of the family, you know, this was, you know, so I didn't know the bride and the bride's family. It was just meeting them for the first time. So I was really the unknown factor there. So I could have completely been the fool on the dance floor, and it would not have mattered at all. They would have like, did you see that guy, that bald guy dancing out there? Who was that guy? And some of them would never find out. So it would only be acting the fool in front of my wife's cousins and uncles and aunts, which is nothing new. So I was okay, but we had a good time. And so here's what I'm doing today, Adam. I'm broadcasting from my daughter's apartment that she lives in with her roommates. She is a student at Northeastern University in Boston. So this is a first, a college. She told me not to call it a dorm. But it kind of sounds fun to call it a dorm. It makes me feel a little young. So this is the first time I've ever done a show from the dorm.
What year in college is she?
She's going into her senior year.
Okay. So that's the prime time to move off of campus. I think I moved off campus after my sophomore year in college. I lived in an apartment for my junior and senior years. So like the second half of your college experience is usually the time when one moves out of the dorms and into a nearby apartment. But oftentimes the apartments that a lot of students tend to live in are basically dorms, right? Because there are a lot of students there, and they tend to still do the things that most students do in dorms in terms of socializing and such. So it's just maybe a pricier dorm.
Yes. And so she lives with three roommates. It's close. Like Northeastern, for people that don't know, is right in the city of Boston. You can walk to Fenway Park, which would be very dangerous for me if I had attended Northeastern here, especially in the springtime. Like, wow, if the Red Sox were playing. And they can get the student tickets. My daughter is partaking in this for like $9. So
the Red Sox are home today, by the way, to the Blue Jays, but it's this evening. So I guess you could go if you wanted to.
Well, I'd have to skip my flight, and then I'd be coming at you tomorrow from the dorm. But we're coming home tonight, if all things go smoothly on the airlines. But it is going to be a great night of television because we've got two great games. You've got Tennessee, who extended the College World Series to the limit, playing Texas A&M. We're going to get a report on that at 11:30 today with Mitch Light from The Athletic, who was at a wedding himself over the weekend. We'll have to compare notes, his role as the 50-plus guy at the wedding, and it was not a family member of his. So we're going to get some insight on that. But we'll also get the breakdown of the pitching matchup tonight. What he thinks. These are two very even teams, two SEC teams. One of them's going to win the title. Of course, Tennessee has been knocking on the door for a couple years now. A big opportunity after they won yesterday. They were trailing 1-0 in the seventh inning and then turned the game around with a big two-run homer, and then padded it with another two-run homer and took it home. So all the marbles on the line. And then Adam, of course, as you know, we'll talk a lot about Game 7 tonight. A Game 7 in any sport, and it was funny, I heard you co-hosting last week, and you guys were talking about how the NBA and NHL Finals have kind of lacked that dramatic Game 7 kind of memorable series.
Boy, have things changed since then.
Things have changed. How about that?
Yes, I'm just glad we're getting a Game 7 in professional sports. The last time it happened in the NBA and NHL or Major League Baseball was 2019. There were two Game 7s in championship rounds in 2019. The World Series, when the Nationals beat the Astros in 7 games, and in the Stanley Cup Final, when the Blues beat the Bruins in 7 games. So it's been 5 years since we had a Game 7 championship game in any of those sports. So I'm very excited about that. I stumbled upon an interesting statistic as I was doing some reading this morning, and I think you'll find this interesting as well, Willie. The last time a home team won a Game 7 in a championship series in Major League Baseball, the NBA, or the NHL was in 2013. The Miami Heat won Game 7 at home against the San Antonio Spurs in the 2013 NBA Finals. Since then, the road team has won the past 6 Game 7s. The 2019 World Series, Nationals over Astros. The 2019 Cup Final, Blues over Bruins. The 2017 World Series, Astros over Dodgers. the 2016 World Series, Cubs over, I guess they were, they still the Indians at that time in 2016.
Yes.
Now Guardians. The 2016 NBA Finals, the Cavaliers over the Warriors, and the 2014 World Series, the Giants over the Royals. So the road team has won the past six Game 7 championship games in professional sports. So a lot working against the Panthers tonight in terms of historical context, or so it would seem. But tell me if this is a simmering hot take. But if the Oilers win tonight, I believe it will be the greatest championship win in North American professional sports history.
I think you can make a strong argument with that. And I thought you were going to maybe say since World War II or something like that, because there was one in 1942. I'm
yes.
not here to tell you what that was like. You know, there were only six teams in the league the one time it has happened in the Cup final. It's never happened in Major League Baseball. Of course, the Red Sox in 2004 in the LCS came from behind against the Yankees. That was quite a feat,
right?
For sure. But it wasn't the final, right? It wasn't for the title. We have seen some 3-0 comebacks in hockey, and that's something that I think is an interesting discussion.
There have been four.
Since the salary cap.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Since the and
overall.
And a couple since the salary cap, and it, to me it makes more sense that it could happen. It's more likely to happen in a hard salary cap league like the NHL, where there just isn't that much difference between the two teams that are playing. I think that's part of the case here, don't you think? But it's not like this was a mismatch from the start. These were two evenly matched teams that just they went on two different roles, and now we'll see what happens in Game 7. But I like your argument. I don't know what you would put up against it. Football really can't have anything like that, right?
Right. I guess if you want to make an argument for football, you could talk about, in terms of recent history, you could talk about the Patriots' comeback against the Falcons from, 28-3 down to win.
Yes.
You could talk about the Giants against the Patriots, the undefeated Patriots. You could talk about that as well, but I believe, as you said, only five comebacks ever from a 3-0 series deficit in Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA. Four in the NHL, one in Major League Baseball, zero in the NBA. Only one of those in a final, which as you said, was in 1942, the Stanley Cup Final, Leafs against the Red Wings. But think about just the number of teams, the caliber of player back then. I mean, the fact that the Oilers might do this, I mean, I think, and then conversely, if the Panthers lose this game, it might be the biggest collapse in North American professional sports history. So it's captivating television. If you have the multi-view on YouTube TV, you're going to get a workout tonight between Game 3 of the College World Series and Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final.
Yes, and audience is going to be interesting to watch, not only locally, where with all the University of Tennessee alum and fans in the area, there's going to be a big viewership in Nashville. But I'm also curious to see how many people in Nashville are going to watch a Game 7. Richard Deitch wrote an interesting column in The Athletic talking about sort of the big picture, and he's not even counting the audience in Canada, which I would imagine, Adam, if there are, 10 million people in Canada? How many people are in Canada? 10 million? 8 million?
That's a good question. I would need to consult Wikipedia.
Right, but the percentage of people watching up there is enormous, right? This is the Super Bowl. This is everything up there. So he's not even counting that audience, but he thinks with the games being on ABC, the ratings have an opportunity for a Game 7 to be very, very high and a big success for the NHL. It would be disappointing if they weren't. But Game 6 had a very big rating, even though it was a lopsided game. It averaged, I think, close to 5, or had a peak of almost 5 million. Viewers, and I would think it would even build on it more with that. Even though one of the teams is from a Canadian market and the other team is from a very nondescript, it's not like the Florida Panthers have a national following, right, like the Red Wings would, or the Chicago Blackhawks, or the Boston Bruins. So given those circumstances, this is a good feather in the cap, I think, for the league.
Yeah, and when you consider all of the storylines at play, right, just the fact that history could be made tonight, you could see one of the greatest series wins in North American professional sports history, one of the greatest collapses in North American professional sports history, Connor McDavid trying to win the Stanley Cup, and he's been absolutely sensational, just breaking records left and right. You know, there's a lot on the line here for both teams, and this is the perfect storm if you are a casual fan, someone who has not watched hockey at all or just watches it, you know, periodically. This is the type of game that you make time to watch, even if you are not a hockey fan like you and I are, or you know, Predators fans tend to be during the season. So I'm really excited about it. You know, I've been picking again. I picked the Panthers to sweep the Oilers. I know you picked them to win game four and extend the series. I thought they were demoralized, but boy, was I wrong. You know, the Oilers have been just taking it to them over the past three games. I think the aggregate score is 18-5 in the past three games. Not even close.
That's one of the compelling things. It's just how easily Edmonton has, relatively speaking, has won the three games. The game six was somewhat close because Florida made a comeback, but Edmonton jumped ahead in that game too. So that it's been two separate series almost. The 3-0 lead that they built and then the 3-0 lead, which makes me wonder, this is the old adage, right, of you hear people say this, the argument of whether momentum exists. And there are people in hockey that will tell you there is no momentum that carries from game to game. But that certainly would be hard to believe. You'd have it'd be a hard sell for now. But if the Panthers did it, I think you could argue that it's an equally impressive accomplishment to lose a 3-0 lead and then come back and be able to slam the brakes on the other team and win game seven. Because it just doesn't seem like it's possible right now. But I feel like this will be a good game.
A lot of legacies are on the line with, you know,
yes.
think about the Oilers. You know, mentioned obviously McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. On the other side, though, you've got Sergei Bobrovsky, who's been doing this for a long time. Early in the series, he was the favorite for the Conn Smythe Trophy. I remember writing a story last week, time flies, that if he were to win the Stanley Cup and Conn Smythe, you can automatically punch his ticket to the Hockey Hall of Fame because he would have two Vezina trophies, a Conn Smythe Trophy, and the Stanley Cup. But he has not been good these past three games. His teammates haven't helped, but he has not been good. You know, Paul Maurice, I believe, is the longest tenured coach in terms of seasons coached without winning a championship. And I think across all sports, all professional sports, not just the NHL. I mean,
wow. So he's gone past Marty Schottenheimer and all these people that we know in the other sports that are known for the Gene Mock in baseball for decades and decades. Never won the whole thing. That's crazy.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was in that.
I'll have to look it up, and I will during the break. But you know, the fact that this is a defining moment for him as well. If he gets that Stanley Cup, or whether or not he presided over an epic collapse. So a lot on the line, not just for the teams, but individual players and coaches on both sides.
Sure. And here's a note on McDavid. This was a good point by Richard Deitch in The Athletic. And the idea is you're selling a game seven to a casual fan. The way you get a bigger audience than you normally get, a much bigger audience, is you get people that don't normally watch the games to tune in. We know hockey is not the same mass following as the NFL. So you got to get some people on board. So how do you sell it? It's a game seven, number one. But you also have Connor McDavid as that generational player that's trying to win it for the first time. I think that's a great storyline. And last week when Willie Mays passed away, we had a great sort of just remembrance reflection with Tyler Kepner. And he was talking about Willie Mays in this sense. He said he was having a conversation with Bob Costas. And Bob Costas said in sports sometimes the greatest athletes sort of just rise up. You could be somebody who just comes to a game and doesn't know anything about any of the players on either team. And you notice the one great player. I do think Connor McDavid has that. Would you agree?
Oh, yes.
Adam, if you've never watched a
Absolutely.
Hockey game before, if you tune in tonight and you just kind of say, look, I don't know anything about either team, I just want to watch game seven, you will notice McDavid without the announcers telling you. So if you were at the game, really, is the true test, because the announcers are going to be talking about McDavid from the time that the puck dropped. But you see what I'm saying.
Yes, and by the way, this is from NHL Network. Head coaches / managers with most seasons before first championship. Paul Maurice, number one on the list at 26 without a championship. Oh. Dusty Baker at 25 years with the 2022 Houston Astros. Larry Brown, 21 years with the 2003-2004 Detroit Pistons. Andy Reid, 21 seasons with the 2019 Kansas City Chiefs. Barry Trotz, 19 seasons before he won it with the Capitals in 2018. And Bruce Bochy, 16 seasons for the 2010 San Francisco Giants.
And now he's won it four times since. So that's the good news for Paul Maurice, is there's hope. All those guys eventually won it. And you feel sad for the other the group that we could find the list of people that coached as many seasons as a Gene Mock or somebody like that that never did get the one title under his belt. So definitely, this is going to be great television tonight. We're looking forward to it. We'll touch on this game and the College World Series. So we'll do that first. We'll talk about Omaha, Tennessee against Texas A&M for the title tonight. And I'd love to know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, are you planning on watching both? Is this a sports bar night? Or are you just going to watch one or the other? I'd love to know what people are watching tonight, because I'm in a dilemma. How about this, Adam? I'm on the plane, so I've got to find a way. I got to make sure I can get the internet, the live TV option, and be able to try to. Can you flip back and forth on the plane? Can anybody help me out on that?
What airline are you flying?
Southwest flight, Southwest.
Okay, so Southwest does have free television, which you can get on your device. They have free live TV. Okay. So I don't know if they will have both. I think they'll have ABC and ESPN. So you might have to, if you have two devices, you might have to stream, you might have to take one of your, you know, who are you traveling with? Your wife and just your wife? You might
Abby
have to.
And Aaron. So I might have to wrestle there. Maybe I can get Aaron to read a book. That's possible. She does love to read a book.
You may need two phones, your own and one of your family members' phones, streaming one on one and one on the other.
I feel like I might be able to get a crowd around me, too, of people just wanting to watch one or the other, and I could become very popular on this flight if I can pull that off.
You have to keep your seatbelt on at all times, you know? You can't move about the cabin.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There are rules. So if anybody has any tips of watching live sports on the plane, I haven't done it very much. I usually just zone out with, you know, a Netflix download or a podcast, or I actually do pull out a book every now and then, which is rare these days. But what's everybody doing tonight? 615-737-1025 is the number. Adam Vingan is with us throughout the week. We will be setting the table for the Predators offseason. There have been some interesting moves the last week, and it's only going to lead to more as everybody gathers for the draft at the Sphere in Las Vegas after the climactic Game 7 tonight. So it's a big week for the NHL. We're going to talk football later in the show at 1 o'clock with Teron Davenport. So Teron will visit with him, and he is, of course, a fellow Mets fan. And Adam, the Mets had another great Mets moment last night. They're actually playing really, really well. They're 13-6 in the month of June. And Edwin Diaz, who finally got it together and started pitching well, gets busted for having the sticky stuff on the fingers.
Mm-mm.
Come on. Isn't that, I mean, I know you love to have fun at the Mets' expense, but go ahead. You can take your shot. Adam is a DC guy. He is a Nationals fan.
We're trying
to catch you guys, by the way.
All I will say is that, you know, the Grimace era is over, right? They have lost since Grimace throughout the first pitch.
There are people that want to keep it alive. I've seen Mets fans show up on the road. They've been on the road in Texas and in Wrigley to play the Cubs. They won the series in both places, and there were people dressed up in purple with the Grimace. Look, so the Grimace, I think, has lost twice. They've won all the series, but they have lost now. Since the Grimace was perfect, 7-0, and I think they're now, I think they're 10-2 since the Grimace threw out the first pitch.
Yeah, look, you got to do.
Do you really want to keep the Grimace alive? Like, how long do you want to go with this? That's my question.
Well, you said that they're undefeated in series since the Grimace first pitch. Well,
yes.
I think you have to keep it going.
You might have to ride the wave,
right.
I think, for a while.
I agree.
But Grimace
deserves his flowers, you know. Sometimes I think he gets forgotten by Ronald McDonald and Mayor McCheese and the Hamburglar. People don't give Grimace his due. He had his own shake recently at McDonald's, so I'm okay with Grimace getting some of the spotlight finally.
He's a fascinating character. And you know what? I had not thought about Mayor McCheese in a long time. He might be the biggest forgotten member of the Ronald McDonald family.
Yes.
Mayor McCheese. That's a good pull. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Mitch Light. from The Athletic, and we'll get the breakdown of what to look for tonight. Also, a couple other tidbits. You know, there's he covers college football for The Athletic, and there's a lot of shakeup. There's looks like now you can have, if you want to have 100 coaches on the sideline at the football game, we might see it now. The legislation is changing there. The ever rapid pace that things are moving in college sports, it is nuts, to say the least. It's the Wild West. And also, Vanderbilt has made a couple changes on their staff for baseball, and he'll have some insight in that as well. But mostly, we're going to break down Game 3 tonight. Stay tuned. We're just getting started here on the show. Call us, text us, be with us throughout the day, 615-737-1025. What are you watching tonight? It's a big night of television. Stay tuned. We're getting started here on Willie and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game. We're back here on Willie and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Adam Vingan here with you this week here on the show. And we're back to our regular hours at 11 to 2. We were shuffling the deck a little bit with the summer vacations going on, but we call it the summer extravaganza. We're going to have fun, and we've got a great week of sports ahead. A lot of action-packed things. Also, let me tell you about Nashville's best deal of the week. It's Puckett's Restaurant. Swing by Puckett's Restaurant, where down-home tradition meets a vibrant atmosphere, from their mouth-watering slow-smoked barbecue to comforting classics and live music. So go to thegamenashville.com/deals to get a $50 gift card to Puckett's for only $25 while supplies last. So check that out. All right, let's see if we can bring – is Mitch Light on the line with us? Connor Newt, by the way, is back behind the glass in for Nick this week. So Nick is getting a little rest and relaxation. Connor, we got Mitch?
We do have Mitch.
All right, let's bring on Mitch Light from The Athletic. He's been writing a weekly column on college baseball throughout the baseball season, also editor for college football for The Athletic, so he is in the know. Mitch, it comes down to the final game tonight. We've been asking everybody which one or both are you watching tonight, Game 7 or the final game of the College World Series? Some people are going to be making decisions, but I'm sure you'll be watching some baseball tonight.
Yes, I think you know me well enough, Willie, that I will be tuning in to the baseball. I will, I'll check a hockey score here and there, but, baseball is my first love, and obviously big college baseball guy. So, yeah, I mean, not much more you can hope for from a college baseball standpoint. I just feel the sport every year, and maybe it's just I live in a college baseball bubble, but feel like the sport kind of penetrates the mainstream a little bit more every year. And I think this year, and I don't know what the numbers will be, but my guess is this will be among the most watched College World Series totally, and then probably the three-game championship series as well.
Adam and I were talking about this dynamic because this happens a lot. You see TV ratings. Game 2, of course, yesterday was on ABC, and that obviously yes. gets you in front of a lot more people than if you just had all of the games on ESPN, which traditionally has been the case for the last, I don't know how many years since ESPN has had the exclusive coverage. For a long time, CBS did go through a stage, I think, when you and I were in college, Mitch, where they had the final game for a few years. But I would imagine yesterday's ratings were pretty darn high based on the drama of the game and it being on ABC.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. You know, a lot of fans that don't follow as closely, and I don't follow ratings closely, but they don't realize the difference between network TV and ESPN and ESPN2. You can have a game on ESPN on a Monday in the same quality of game, same fan bases, let's say, on ESPN2 the next day, and the ratings on ESPN are just going to be a lot higher. Same thing as you trickle down to the SEC network. It's just, even though, you know, we all have different viewing habits nowadays, network TV still dominates. And you brought up something interesting. I have no idea if this is true, but I bet that those, like, late 90s national championship games that were on CBS might have higher ratings than anything we get now, just because it was national TV and there wasn't much competition for TV, you know, sports viewing. Back then, if you were on CBS on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon, I'm sure you got really high ratings.
Yeah, it probably wasn't as fragmented as it is now.
Right.
It's harder to get
exactly.
those mass audiences for sure. But I think we would all agree the product is a lot better for sure. This series has not disappointed. Two really good games that we've seen. So if people are just tuning in for the final, I don't think they would sit there and go, this is boring, or I don't want to see a, you know, a 4.5 hour game or something like that. Two good games. And Mitch, one thing that I think has jumped out, it's almost like Major League Baseball now, in that it's hard for a starting pitcher, unless your name is Paul Skeens or somebody like that, to dominate. So it really takes a committee of pitchers, and that's what we've seen from both teams. And that's what makes me wonder about how everybody's going to go about it tonight. What do they have left over? Because it's taking three or four pitchers each game to get through these lineups.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday Drew Beam probably threw as well as he's thrown. I was actually driving yesterday. I was listening to it on the radio, so I didn't watch. But, you know, Drew Beam was outstanding, and he pitched into the fifth, but I don't believe he got an out in the fifth. So that kind of proved your point there. A really good starting pitcher who's thrown a lot of big games couldn't get out of the fifth, or couldn't get, you know, more than the fourth. So, yeah, it's totally – you need bullpen depth, and both teams have it. Tennessee's probably in a little better situation now pitching. You know, Xander Seacrest has thrown really well of late. They don't have too many guys. You know, Aaron Combs threw 63 pitches yesterday. I would say he's out. For A&M, Chris Cortez, who has been fantastic this year. I know he wasn't very efficient yesterday. He threw 99 pitches, a career high. He's out. But, you know, Evan Aschenbeck, who's been maybe the best reliever in college baseball this year, threw 46 2 days ago. I'd imagine he's back. So, if I were grading both teams, like from a pitching standpoint, like what they have available, I'd probably say, you know, Tennessee's at a B and maybe A&M's at a B minus. You know, I think not having Cortez is a big deal for A&M because he's so effective. He can get the strikeouts with men on base, but, you know, there's no way he's pitching tonight. But big picture, Willie, I think both teams are in pretty good shape.
Yes, and like you said, it's fairly normal for them to piece together a game. So you mentioned Seacrest is going to get the start for Tennessee. If people have watched him, he's the lefty, right? He's got a really good breaking ball, very kind of a sweepy breaking ball that's hard to track. He's not what I would say a super dominating pitcher. He's not going to wow you like a Paul Skeens first round pick, you know, that you see a lot of times in games like this. He's not a true ace, but he's a good pitcher that could probably get him into the fourth or the fifth where they can piece it.
To prove your point, he's one of the few like SEC starting pitcher. I wouldn't say few. He's got fewer strikeouts than innings pitched, and you don't really see that with frontline starters nowadays, you know, more of a pitch to contact guy. He's been really good down the stretch. He's had a career, you know, he was a midweek starter. He's played a lot of roles. I think if you would ask the Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson before the year, you know, would Xander Seacrest be a weekend starter all year? I don't know what their answer would be. I'd guess they'd be a little surprised, but I think they're to the point now where, you know, with truth serum, maybe they'd say Drew Beam if they had a win or, you know, one game to win a national title, but they might also say Xander Seacrest. So even though he's the number three starter and hasn't been that true ace throughout his career, my guess is they are very confident with him on the mound.
Another thing that was a theme yesterday. Well, first, before we move forward here, let's complete it. What is Texas A&M? Do you know who they're going to start tonight?
Yeah, Justin Lampkin, who's been a weekend starter, I believe most of the year, has been up and down, was very good earlier in the year. When they got up to that great start, they were getting great starting pitching. And I thought Texas A&M, you know, quick tangent, was when they were at their best, I thought they were the most complete team in the country. Like midseason, I thought they were the best team because their lineup and their starting pitching. Now they've had some injuries to both down the stretch. So I think you'd probably give the nod overall roster to Tennessee. But Lampkin, I believe, has not allowed an earned run in two outings in the College World Series. He's been, you know, like I said, he's been up and down. Josh Stewart is available. He threw 56 pitches the other day. And like I said, Evan Aschenbeck, the lefty, threw 46 pitches. And they got a bunch of other guys. Again, it's probably Ryan Prager and Chris Cortez are the only two main guys for them that are not available tonight.
Yeah, Johnny Holstaff, you have the rest of the summer to rest up. You go for it in this one. Yesterday's theme, I thought Tennessee did a good job of keeping their composure because they were trailing early. They only won nothing, but they had a lot of opportunities to score and left a bunch of guys on base. And the longer that goes on, you wonder if you've missed all the opportunities you're going to get, but they just kept going and they finally got the big hit. The lefty on lefty home run to turn it around, a huge, huge moment in the game.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, I was listening on the radio, and it just felt like Tennessee was going to, you know, break it open. One hit, one, or there. I was listening to the A&M broadcast on their app, and their announcers were, they were good. I never listened to before. They were definitely homers like you'd expect, but they were but they were good. I mean, it's good analysis, and it was just like one big, after every inning, it was like, phew, can't believe we got out of that one. And they were admitting, you know, Tennessee was playing the cleaner game. A&M had some defensive miscues. A&M very fortunate, you know, turned that double play. So it seemed like, you know, we've all seen enough baseball where it looked like the opposite of what happened. Might, you know, Tennessee just could not break through. Then A&M might get that one big hit. But it was the other way around, as you mentioned, and it's just another example of how dangerous that Tennessee lineup is. I'll take out like Cannon Peoples. You look, he's had a disappointing year. You look at the stat line from yesterday, he was 0-for-1. But he bats ace. The three walks helps turn that lineup over to get to Christian Moore. And I thought that was key. You know, obviously, Stark hit the big home run, or the home run
right,
that gave him the three-run lead. And he had been struggling in Omaha. He had hit the ball well at home in postseason. So, again, just, you know, you get to the bottom of that lineup, you might kind of exhale as an opposing team. But then, again, Peebles working those walks and Stark hitting the home run really put it out of reach, although A&M did threaten in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah, it's Zach Stark. I think he was 0-for-16 in Omaha before he hit that two-run homer to put it away. Cal Stark, yeah. Zach Stark. Yeah. I'm thinking that he was a baseball player at one point, I believe, Zach Stark.
I don't know the name, but you know,
pitcher,
I would defer to you on that.
From back in the day. You get older, you get a lot of names jumbled up in your head, and you start putting guys together. But yes, Cal Stark is right. So, Mitch, before we let you go, it's going to be fun tonight. Well, one game, winner take all. The tension is going to be awesome. That's what's going to be great about television tonight in sports. It's just the essence of sports, where this is it. I mean, this it's coming to an end tonight. I hope both games, the hockey and the baseball, are well played, and we get some good games, because I think that's going to be. You want it for those teams, for sure. Let me ask you about Vanderbilt baseball here. They've made a couple of changes on their staff here. What do you know about the changes they made, the guy they're bringing in?
Well, Jason King is the first assistant they hired, and he's a guy I knew the name. Now, he was the head coach at Dayton. I kind of knew that one. Oh, yeah, that made sense. But I remember his name because – I forgot if it was after what year it was after Travis Jewett left to become the head coach at Tulane. I think Corbin talked to Jason King, who was then a head coach. I forgot the school, very successful Division II head coach in the Northeast. And I don't know what the deal was. I just remember he was in the mix for that job. So Jason King, he left his job as a Division II school, went to Army as an assistant 1 year, then was at Dayton 7 years. So, you know, you look at their offensive numbers, it seemed to be over the years a pretty good offensive club. So, I don't know, just a new voice as a hitting coach. I don't know if that's his official title, but Jason King brought on a lot of experience, an older guy. Then this hasn't been announced yet, but Ty Blankmeyer is coming over from Duke. And if the name sounds familiar, if you follow college baseball, his dad was a longtime St. John's coach. Blankmeyer was the volunteer assistant at Wake Forest for 1 year, then went over to Duke for 2 years. Very highly regarded. I know Vanderbilt had to make a good offer to get him away from Duke. And, baseball recruiting is kind of hard to follow, but I know that Duke has recruited very well in recent years. I'll say they've evaluated very well in recent years. They had some freshmen this year from the Northeast to a lot of power numbers. They've had good pitching in recent years. So I think this is a really good hire. He's very highly regarded. And one thing, Willie, there's no longer the volunteer assistant and then like the hitting coach and the pitching coach. There's now 3-time full assistants. I think that's 2 years old. So they can divvy up the – it used to be your hitting coach was usually doubled as the recruiting coordinator. Now they can kind of divvy those up a little bit more with 3 full-time assistant coaches.
And out of necessity, I would think talent evaluation, not only of your own players and your high school recruits, but just – sort of keeping a pulse on what's maybe going to go down, what's going down, you know, in the coming years, especially all the times. One of the things we've talked about in this tournament is how there's so many players playing key roles for their teams that have played one or two previous places before coming to where they are right now, trying to win a national title. So it's like somehow you've got to come up with an efficient system of monitoring even Division II and Division III baseball of potential guys that could hit the portal and move up, that type of thing.
100%. And like the college baseball is sure everyone knows the big power hitters, the Brayden Montgomerys, the transfers like that are no brainers. But these teams are littered with guys that, if you look at what they did at their previous stops, you're like, A.J. Causey, you know, Jacksonville State. When he transferred to Tennessee, I looked at his numbers. I was like, okay, you know, whatever. You know, I think he had more hits than innings. And then he goes to Tennessee and becomes their Friday night guy or, you know, in the combo there. But Georgia has some guys who mashed the ball this year that you looked at the numbers of the previous stop weren't necessarily great. So that's to your point about talent evaluation. What can we do with his swing to tweak it? You know, what can we do with this guy's motion? And, you know, if you're in Division II, we know you didn't face top competition, but here's what we like about you. So, yeah, I think being able to evaluate how guys project is going to be just supremely important in college baseball.
Yeah, getting your information, talking to the right people, all of that, it's becoming a bigger part of the game. Team building, because it is different than it was just 2 or 3 years ago, without a doubt. Mitch, I was racking my brain the other day trying to figure out in 2021, as recent as we can find, when Vanderbilt was in the final against Mississippi State, and I don't know much about Mississippi State's roster construction there, but just having followed Vanderbilt as closely as we do, I can't think off the top of my head of a single key guy. Maybe there were one or two, but the number of transfers that were playing key roles on that team was next to nothing, whereas now virtually every team in the field in Omaha had several transfers who, like I said before, sometimes they were coming from more than one place.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And I'd have to go look at that Mississippi State roster. I think a couple guys off. They definitely had a couple guys transfer, but I don't recall any of Vanderbilt's key guys as transfers. Yeah, it's just it's the way it is now. I did that coaches forum before the season where I talked to 11 head coaches, 3-part series at The Athletic, and one thing that Chris Lamona said to me that kind of stuck out about the transfer portal, he based on SEC teams. He's like, there are no bad teams anymore because every team has the ability to look at their, to some degree, to look at their roster and plug some holes where you might go into the offseason in a normal year, you know, we don't have a good third outfielder and we need a second baseman, so we have to play a freshman who's not ready or someone who's just not, quote unquote, SEC caliber. Now these teams can go plug those holes. Now, they don't always work out. There's obviously teams have weaknesses. But I always think when you see the SEC dominance and some of the top teams in the ACC, they are all able to plug holes in the offseason where in years past those would have been big weaknesses. Now they might not be strengths, but those guys might not kill you like they did in the past.
Well, good point. Mitch, enjoy all the action tonight. Thanks a lot for coming on with us today, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, well, take care, bro.
All right. Mitch Light from The Athletic joining us here. When we come back, we'll yo-yo back over to the Stanley Cup Final. We've got a topic, sort of a general topic, and that is, I know how beloved Mattias Ekholm was when he played for the Predators. He has a chance to win the title tonight. How do we feel about some of your favorite players winning championships for other teams? It's a little bit of a bittersweet feeling because you want it for your team, but who are guys that you get happy for, or what is the feeling when you see somebody like that on the verge of a title? Let us know what you think about that. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan rejoins us here in just a moment. Stay tuned. We're just getting it cranked up here on 102.5 The Game. This is Willie and D-Mace. Willie and D-Mace continues, wrapping up the first hour. We're going to talk some Predators and NHL news and notes, the silly season or whatever you want to call it. The draft coming up, free agency, the changes are coming. It's brewing. There's already some moves that have been made as we lead up to it. We'll talk heavy about that during the noon hour. Then Teron Davenport joins us at 1. We've got our text line going. Adam Vingan is with us here. So, Adam, we'll read some texts here in a moment. Some people are already lining up on this. I asked the question, who are the athletes that you are most happy for when they win a title, but it's not for your team? It's after they've moved on for your team. And you have to kind of fight the jealousy there. You might be honest and just say, you know what, I'm not happy for anybody. I'm jealous of people when they win the title. But how do you feel about that subject?
I guess it depends on the player, right? If the player was a part of your team and He was a fan favorite. I guess if most players, if they spend a long time in a particular place, do become fan favorites. But most of the time, I'm happy for that player. And the reason why we bring this up, as you mentioned before the break, is Matias Ekholm, who was drafted by the Predators, spent the majority of his career with the Predators before being traded last season to the Edmonton Oilers at the trade deadline, around the trade deadline. He has a chance to win the Stanley Cup tonight with the Edmonton Oilers. And personally, I'm hoping he does it. I always enjoyed my time covering Matias Ekholm. You know, wonderful to work with, really great guy, good player, impactful player. You've seen the impact that he has had on the Edmonton Oilers. Specifically, if you want to narrow it to one individual, the impact he's had on Evan Bouchard has been outstanding. I mean, Bouchard has been a revelation over the past year or so in the league in terms of an impactful point-producing defenseman. And a lot of that goes back to when the Oilers acquired Ekholm and put him on a pair with Evan Bouchard. They have played so many minutes for the Oilers in these playoffs, and they're often playing with Connor McDavid, so they certainly benefit from that. But I think a lot of Predators fans, I'm speaking, I think, for a lot of Predators fans who would be happy to see Matias Ekholm win the Stanley Cup tonight, considering all he did for the organization.
I would agree. I mean, he is class through and through. In fact, Benjamin, our text line, says, would love to see Ekholm win with the Oilers. He also said, I would also love to see Derrick Henry win a Super Bowl and solidify a Hall of Fame career. Now, that's interesting, especially given
the team he's playing for, right?
The Ravens, right.
Right. No love lost for the Ravens among Titans fans, to be sure.
Yeah. So that'll be something. That is something I still think that hasn't really sunk in yet until we actually start seeing Derrick Henry running the ball for the Ravens, how we're going to feel about that. Another texter throws this one in there on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Loved watching Kimmo Tiininen hoist the cup with the Blackhawks, but I still hate the Hawks. That was sort of mixed emotions there. But yes, Kimmo Tiininen is another one that it was absolutely beloved by the Predator fans. And so you have to separate. You have to separate and compartmentalize a little bit, don't you?
We have two separate texters who said that they don't want the Oilers to win the Stanley Cup despite Matias Ekholm because they don't want Corey Perry to win the Stanley Cup. Corey Perry, of course, playing for the Oilers, set the NHL record in the Stanley Cup final. He's the first player to appear in the final He is the first player in NHL history to appear in the Stanley Cup final with five different teams. Of course, Anaheim at the beginning of his career, he did it with the Montreal Canadiens, the Dallas Stars, and the Tampa Bay Lightning in recent years, lost all three series with those teams. So I guess there's sort of a Corey Perry curse going on lately, and that could continue if the Oilers lose Game 7. But a couple of people who have said that despite Matias Ekholm, they do not want the Oilers to win because they don't want Corey Perry to go out on top, presuming that he would retire after this.
Inner conflict. Perry, being not wanting Perry to do well and wanting Ekholm to do well.
John on the text line says, we all love Ekholm and hate Perry. Go Panthers. The entire greater Nashville area.
Representing the entire Nashville area.
Speaking for everybody.
Yes. And so Harabella Henry says, look, I don't want any team, not named the Predators, to win the Cup. I'll say this, Adam. In 2018, you and I, of course, were both watching closely as the team you grew up watching, the Washington Capitals, coached by Barry Trotz, and the Predators playing the Jets. And these were two of the best teams. Yeah, in fact, the series that were going on at the time, you had the Capitals and the Penguins, two giants, right? The Penguins were the two-time defending champion, and it was the team that the Capitals, who were winning President's Trophies and things like that, just could not get past. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Predators and the Jets, who were two of the juggernauts throughout the regular season. And I'm thinking in my head, how crazy would it be? And we discussed it on our show. If Barry Trotz was playing against the Predators for the Stanley Cup, that would have been unbelievable to watch. But when the Capitals did win it after it all shook out and the Predators got beat by the Jets in the seventh game, I was very much rooting for Barry Trotz and very happy that he won it. Even, and you remember this, Adam, David Poyle went out of his way publicly kind of to say, look, I just want to salute Barry Trotz. And that was a tough time for the Predators, right, after they lost, after having the President's Trophy.
Yes, and that was my answer because, as you said, I grew up a Capitals fan. I started my professional journalism career reporting on the Capitals before I moved to Nashville. And before that, I was living in Washington as a college student. So I was there through much of the early Alex Ovechkin era and saw, as either a fan or a reporter, a lot of those heartbreaking losses in the postseason. I think to the series they lost against Montreal when Yaroslav Halak turned into a brick wall. I think about the losses to the Penguins and the losses to the Rangers. So when the Capitals won the Stanley Cup in 2018, I was happy to see, as you mentioned, Barry Trotz, considering all he had done for Nashville, but also Alex Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, guys I had gotten to know as a reporter who I had seen lose multiple heartbreaking playoff series, get over the hump and win a title. So that was the first thing that came to mind when I thought about, okay, which players was I happy to see? It doesn't count because it wasn't like they played for my favorite team and then went to another team. But I think Mattias Ekholm, a lot of people here who either knew Mattias, you know, who reported on Mattias, who called Mattias's games like yourself, or just Predators fans would be very happy to see him win just because of the person that he is and what he meant for this organization for a long time.
Yeah. Kids born in Nashville. I mean, just so many different reasons you could list, but, and I think it also makes it a little easier, Adam, that at least now, maybe there'll be a little more jealousy or bitterness if it doesn't pan out, but it does look like the return that the Predators got in the trade for Mattias Ekholm is promising, right? There's some different ways that they could benefit down the road. I don't know if they'll ever equal what, because I think the Oilers are glad with the price that they paid, that regardless of what happens, because of how well Ekholm was fit, as you pointed out. But I think the Predators hope that they've got some pieces. Reed Schaefer is one. Tanner Molendijk, the player they got in the first round for the Oilers pick, have some promise down the road, particularly Molendijk, who I think everybody's really high on long term.
Yeah, and they have one more asset from that trade that they haven't used. They have a fourth round pick in the draft later this week that they also acquired from Edmonton. So remember, the trade was Ekholm and a sixth round pick in 2024 for Tyson Barrie, who will likely not be back. Reed Schaefer, he was a first round draft pick of the Oilers recently. A 2023 first round pick, which, as you said, was used to take Tanner Molendijk, and a 2024 fourth round pick. So they have one more player that they can select or use that pick to trade for something else. But right, it seems like,
and I think, Adam, if I've got this right, I think they've got the 2 fourth round picks. I think they traded one of them. I don't know if it's Edmonton's pick or their pick. That was swapped around in all. It's sort of the sidebars of the Ryan McDonough trade, if I'm not mistaken.
They have an extra.
They can use these extra ones.
Yes, they have a fourth round pick from Chicago. That looks. I'm trying to see where this came from. It's cap friendly, which, by the way, almost time to turn down cap friendly.
That's going to be a sad day.
It says they have the Blackhawks 2024 fourth round pick, but I don't know how they got that. I'm trying to think. It looks like they must have switched picks last year at the draft, like they made a pick for pick trade,
right?
So they have a
it's extra, hard to keep up
yeah,
with.
They have an extra fourth round draft pick in addition to the one, or they, I don't know, but either way, they have another pick that they can use, you know, to further along the Ekholm tree, so to speak.
Yes, and those things are so hard to keep track of, but every now and then that pick turns into something. Like one of those picks years and years ago in a Paul Gostad trade, A swapping of picks turned out to be
UC Soros. Yes.
So that can happen. Got a lot of funny texts on here. Here's one. Who doesn't want to see Canada burn down after a loss? However, the celebration after 31 years could be just as bad. Yeah, that's another thing. A lot of people centering in on what would it be like to watch Derrick Henry hoist the Super Bowl trophy for the Ravens. Would you be happy for him, or would you be bitter? Or is the answer both? I don't know. A lot of people are throwing out their 2 cents worth on that. We'll come back to this as we turn the page and move into hour number two. 615-737-1025 on our call or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more. Willie Donick, Adam Finkin here with you this week. We're on until 2 o'clock today. And you're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.